welcome to the Josh Meister's Lost podcast, the audio version of the Josh Meister's Lost blog, which you can find at thelostmeister.blogspot.com.
Hi there, everybody. This is the Josh Meister, and welcome to the Josh Meister's Lost podcast. We just got finished watching Season 5, Episode 8, Le Fleur, and we'll be talking about this week's episode in just a moment. And first, there are a couple of things from the pop-ups that they showed for last week's episode, Episode 7, The Life and Death of Jeremy Bentham, and that I thought were interesting and worth pointing out here. One pop-up pointed out that at the very beginning of the last episode, Caesar was in Ben's old office in the Hydra station. So that room that that he found the documents, the map, and all that kind of thing, that was Ben's old office. And I noticed that it kind of made sense to find for him to find a shotgun there hidden, because if you remember, in Ben's house in New Otherton, he also had a shotgun, you know, hidden somewhere in the house. I think that one was in his piano bench. The next pop-up that I took a note on there, the pop-up said there was no camera when Ben arrived. So there were a couple people, I think, in the chat last week that, or no, I think actually I think it was maybe on Lostcast, so they got that wrong, that said that there must have been a camera there when Ben came off of the island, that Widmore must have been watching Ben. And I, when I heard that, I thought, no, that couldn't be the case, because, you know, they didn't show the cameras, for one thing, and, you know, they seemed pretty obvious. I mean, they were, like, right next to where Locke was. So, that's a confirmation of that from the pop-ups, that Widmore put those cameras there at some later time. There was a pop-up that said that Matthew Abaddon posed as, they used that term a couple of times in pop-ups, he posed as Locke's orderly, and so they're obviously strongly hinting that maybe Matthew Abaddon was already working for Charles Widmore at that time. And they, of course, they point out in the pop-up that it was him who inspired Locke to go on the walkabout, which would ultimately lead him to be on Flight 815. And then another pop-up also pointed out, reminded us that Matthew Abaddon recruited the science team to go to the island, Naomi, Daniel Faraday, Charlotte, and Miles. So it seems as though he's been working for Charles Widmore for quite some time, and the pop-ups seem to indicate that he even was working for Widmore before he became Locke's orderly. So that's kind of interesting, because Charles Widmore, by that point, already knew, he'd already identified who John Locke was, and was sending Matthew to go and inspire him to go to the island in the first place. So that's kind of interesting. There was another pop-up that said that reminded us that Abaddon means guardian of the abyss. So I'm not sure, you know, what that's supposed to mean, why they pointed that out in the pop-up, but it kind of interesting, though, because normally I guess that's kind of a bad guy name, I guess, is what maybe what they were trying to point out. So maybe they are hinting that Matthew Abaddon and also by extension Charles Widmore are bad guys. So I don't know. That's tough to say, but it is interesting that they pointed out his name kind of implies that he's evil, which of course is what Hurley said and what Ben would like us to believe. There was a pop-up that reminded us that Ben convinced Saeed that it was Widmore whose people were responsible for Nadia's death. And so if Ben is to be believed, if that really was Widmore who was responsible for that, then, you know, Widmore's a bad guy. And if Saeed knew that Locke was kind of working with Widmore, then all bets would be off as far as getting him back to the island. So the whole last episode was back and forth between Charles Widmore and Benjamin Linus, each claiming that the other is the bad guy, and to not trust each other. We talked about this last week, but there's plenty of evidence for both sides. Just a quick poll from the chat. What do you guys think? How many of you are on Ben's side? How many of you are on Widmore's side? And how many of you are on neither side or kind of torn? Just say Ben, Widmore, or neither. Looks like I'm getting a lot that are saying both bad, neither one, they're both liars, unsure. I did get at least one Ben and one Widmore, two Widmores. Yeah, so I think definitely the jury's out on that. I'm kind of right in between, I guess I could say. I don't know if I'd say I'm in between. I'm more inclined to go with what Bobby140 in the chat says, that both are bad. that they're both just bad guys, and really neither one can be trusted at all. That's sort of how I feel at this point, too. Although, after watching this episode again, maybe I lean a little bit more toward Charles Widmore. I don't know. They've set him up so much to be a bad guy. And as Locke pointed out later in last week's episode, Charles Widmore was the one who was responsible for sending the mercenary team to the island. Bailey Bear says, I think the island is bad. I mean, after it is through with you, it kills you. Nancy Drew says they're referring to Ben and Widmore. They're both good and bad, but it's deciding who's worse. And a couple people said, I'm on Richard Alpert's side. Well, but see, Richard Alpert seems to be defending the island, though, right? Anyway, all right, continuing. Let's see. Matthew Abaddon also, this wasn't from a pop-up, but just something that I hadn't written down in my notes when I watched the episode the first time. After reminding Locke that he was the orderly who convinced him to go on the walkabout, he told Locke, I help get people to where they need to get to, John. That's what I do for Mr. Widmore. So he's helping all these people to get back to the island by helping Locke, and of course he's also helping Charles Widmore for the same reason. Now it's kind of interesting that both Widmore and Ben want all these people to go back to the island. So that strongly seems to indicate that both of them they either feel like they're on the island side, or they would just want to get control of the island. But if Widmore is to believe there's a war coming, and if those people don't get back to the island, then the wrong side wins. And if that's the case, and both Ben and Widmore want all of those people to get back to the island, then who is on the wrong side if it's not Ben or Widmore? All right, so I think that just about does it for the recap of last week's episode. So getting into Lafleur, we find out pretty much right at the beginning of the episode where the title of the episode comes from. And it's Sawyer's nickname, his con name that he gives himself. Basically, the episode starts after Locke turns the wheel. There's a final flash, and Sawyer, Juliet, Miles, and Daniel see a large statue off in the distance. And, of course, my first thought, it's facing the water, or I assumed it sort of looked like it was facing the water, which, of course, we know the four-toed foot statue was facing the water when we first saw it, when Saeed first pointed it out. And so instantly I thought, is this the future four-toed foot statue? Well, there's some interesting stuff about that. On Sledgeweb's Lost site, lost.cubit.net, they've got an article there where they talk about the Egyptian god Anubis, and they've got a screen cap of the backside of the statue, and they compare it with the backside of a statue of Anubis, depicting Anubis, and it certainly seems plausible that statue could be of Anubis. Certainly. We have non-human ears on the statue, look more like they could be dog ears, which is what Anubis, the Egyptian god Anubis, looks like. And something that, we can talk about the Ankh a little bit later, but typically, frequently anyway, Anubis is sort of represented as holding an Ankh. And we saw an Ankh symbol later in the episode that was on Paul's necklace. So we can talk a little bit about that in a little while. But an interesting idea that maybe that statue was originally depicting the Egyptian god Anubis. And if so, what does that say about the original inhabitants of the island? We also know that there are a lot of Egyptian hieroglyphs all over the island, too. So, you know, a lot of people pointed out, you know, this seems so much like Stargate, you know, with Egyptian gods and all that kind of stuff. But it's kind of interesting to get little pieces here and there about the history of the island. Miles says that last flash was different. It was more like an earthquake. And they point out, you know, that as they're talking to each other, they have no more headaches, nosebleeds. They're just gone all of a sudden. And they don't even have dried blood on their noses anymore, which I thought was kind of silly. But, you know, this isn't Cranky Fanatic, so I won't complain too much about that. And so then they say 3 years later, we jump forward a little bit in the storyline, and we see Horus Goodspeed. If you remember him, he showed up a while back in a vision that John Locke had. And so Horus Goodspeed shows up on a security camera, and he's throwing a stick of dynamite, and they go and rescue him. He passes out drunk, I think, is what happened. And the couple of guys who were watching this on the security cameras, one of them had been messing around with some girl who, by the way, I didn't notice it watching the episode, but there's a screenshot that makes it, that certainly looks like the girl was wearing a Geronimo Jackson shirt, which is kind of funny. I'll put that a link up to that, of course, in the show notes so you can see for yourself. But it certainly looks like it says Geronimo Jackson on it. But anyway, the two Dharma security guards who are supposed to be watching these monitors are debating with each other about whether they should go tell LeFleur. And so they do that, and shortly after that we see that, you know, as they go and knock on his door, that we find out he's the Dharma security boss. And then we find out that it's Sawyer. So Sawyer later says that Horus is their fearless leader. So Horus even seems to be the boss of Sawyer. And we find out he's Sawyer's going by the name Jim LeFleur. There's some mention of somebody named Paul by Horus's wife, Amy. And by the way, she's the actress who plays Amy is Ryko Ilsworth, I think is how it's pronounced, and she's the same actress who plays Michelle Desler from 24, if anyone remembers Michelle on 24. And Amy is Horace's wife. She's having a baby, and so my immediate thought was, is she going to die? Because all these women who have had babies on the island have died. And of course we get the answer to that later in the episode, but and then we go back 3 years earlier. Sawyer tries to get Juliet to do the cesarean section because the guy that they've got, he doesn't really know what he's doing. He doesn't really feel comfortable. He's never done a C-section before. And so Sawyer gets Juliet, and she agrees to do it. And then waiting outside, Sawyer and Jin are talking. Jin says he searched grid 133, and there was no sign of their people. And Sawyer says to search grid 134 next, I believe. So apparently the island is sectioned off into grids. And so what Jin has been doing for the past 3 years is systematically searching different sections of the island, which seems sort of strange because, I mean, there certainly would be areas of the island where the others would be, and or the hostiles, as Dharma called them, and it seems like they would want to stay away from them. But and not to mention, this is 3 years later, and they're still searching for their team. There's got to be some other, you know, motive that they have. You know, they must be fully working with Dharma by this point. I can't imagine that Dharma would really believe that they're still looking for their people 3 years later. That seems a little bit unbelievable. And Jin, of course, he speaks English a lot better now than he did 3 years ago because, of course, he's had 3 years to practice it now. And so he says to Sawyer, "How long do we look, James?" And Sawyer says, "As long as it takes." Juliet comes out about then. She says it's a boy, and she says that the mom is okay. So Amy and the baby boy both survived. So apparently this was before women died giving birth on the island, before, and of course as well before Juliet's time. So we don't know exactly what caused that to start happening for mothers and their babies to die during childbirth. Earlier, before we started recording, Bassoon one in the chat said that love that Juliet seemed to get some personal redemption by helping to successfully deliver a baby on the island. And I thought that was a really great point, especially because it made me start to think, well, if that's true, if she's got her redemption on the island, if this was, you know, a redemptive moment, a lot of times what happens on the island is that when people sort of make, they sort of resolve their inner conflict and things like that, that they die. And so I started wondering if maybe that means that Juliet is likely to die soon, because now she's successfully delivered a baby on the island. That's part of her mission in life, perhaps. Ken Walt in the chat points out, not all babies die. Aaron was born on the island. I guess my response to that would be that it seems like all of the folks who died during childbirth probably conceived and tried to give birth on the island, and that seems to be the difference. Whereas Alex and also Aaron were conceived before their mothers came to the island. And similarly, you know, Sun was exactly the opposite of that. Even though she was conceived on the island, she's, you know, most of Sun's pregnancy was off of the island. So Ji Yeon was born in Korea rather than on the island. Bailey Bear has a good question. Ken Walt says, do we know where Amy's baby was conceived? I would say there's probably about 99% certainty that it was on the island, because 3 years ago she was on the island, and at that time she was with Paul. Paul was her husband at that time. And now Horace Goodspeed, who, you know, we know is a member of the Dharma Initiative who's been on the island, is, I guess, currently Amy's husband, or is together with Amy anyway. I think they said that they were married, but so I would assume that they were probably both on the island when their baby was conceived. So Bailey Bear had a good thought. Why did the others kill Paul and try to take Amy? And I thought that was a really great thought, because we don't really know any of that story. We just see them, there's some sort of a conflict in the middle of the jungle, and they killed Paul, they put in a bag over Amy's head, and it seemed as though they were trying to take her away. So it seems kind of messed up if they were, you know, just randomly killing one of the Dharma Initiative folks and trying to steal one of their women, if, you know, and then Richard comes along and says, well, but now they want revenge because they think the Dharma Initiative killed our people. But it's just kind of weird, because it seems like the bad guys here, the ones who started the conflict, were the others. So, in any case, we find out shortly after that that Richard says that the others basically want revenge. There was an advertisement. This is a little bit off topic, but we'll get right back to the topic at hand. There was a movie advertised with Nicolas Cage called Knowing, and the advertisement for the movie said that there were numbers that predict the future, and I'm going, Lost plot ripoff? Come on, people. I mean, this is not the first time that somebody's tried to rip off the Lost plot, but of course, especially those who played the original Lost Ultimate Reality game will probably remember that the Dharma Initiative, the whole purpose of the numbers is to be able to predict the future and predict and prevent the end of the world. And at least that was the main point of the Dharma Initiative, although obviously they had other purposes on the island there too. But that is what the numbers are all about. And, of course, they have some other side effects too, apparently. But now this movie is trying to rip off the idea. I thought that was kind of sad. But I don't know. Who knows? It might be a good movie. Anyway, back to Lost. So 3 years earlier, Horace tells Sawyer, who is going by the name Jim LaFleur, that he needs to leave the island the next morning on a submarine, and says that James isn't Dharma material. Okay, so they did mention 3 years earlier. Daniel says that after Charlotte died, her body disappeared after a flash. So that actually was a little earlier in the episode. Sorry, I got that a little out of order there. So when Daniel was kneeling next to Charlotte right after she died, there was another flash, and then her body disappeared because I guess since she wasn't alive, she didn't make the jump with them. So that explains, you know, what happened to Charlotte's body. All right, so getting back to a little bit later, 3 years earlier, Horace tells Sawyer that he needs to leave the island, and then just after that we see Daniel sees Charlotte as a young girl on the island, which of course we knew was coming because of what Charlotte told Daniel a few episodes ago about how she thought that this scary, crazy man told her to never come back to the island. And so this is a hint that Daniel is going to end up being the guy after, you know, just like Charlotte thought that he was. Okay, so then Richard Alpert shows up in the Dharma Village, which is the future New Otherton, as Juliet points out, that she would live there in the future. Richard Alpert shows up with a torch. Horace Goodspeed goes out to speak with him, and Richard says that the fence doesn't keep him out. And I don't know. I mean, some people have kind of predicted that maybe Richard Alpert is undead or some weird thing like that, and I guess maybe that could explain why the fence wouldn't be enough to keep him out. But a little bit later, let's see. This is after Horace comes back inside. He's talking to another Dharma Initiative member and giving some orders, and he says something about a heavy ordinance, and he talks about increasing the sonic sense to the maximum strength. And Sawyer says, you know, I don't care what you say, Horace. I'm going out there and I'm going to talk to Richard and make things right, because it's not your fault. And so Sawyer goes out there and tells Richard Alpert the whole truth. He tells him plenty of information to make Richard know that Sawyer is, you know, somebody who was with John Locke, who was jumping through time. And so Richard believes Sawyer and says, well, but, you know, I've got to have something. There's got to be some sort of reconciliation made. There's got to be some sacrifice made on behalf of the Dharma Initiative, basically, to satisfy the others after their people died. So shortly after that, Horace and James go to Amy, and Horace says that the deal that they made basically is to send Paul's body back with Richard. Paul was the guy that that was killed by the others when they were trying to take Amy, and they were married, Amy and Paul. And Horace says that if you don't, I understand, and we'll suffer the consequences. And Amy says, no, that's what Paul would want me to do. And Amy takes Paul's Ankh, and so this is where the Ankh comes into the picture. Now, for those who don't know, an Ankh, and of course, if you saw the episode, you know what it looks like. But basically, it looks like a cross, but rather than the top being just a straight line, it's actually a loop at the very top of it. And this is from Wikipedia. The Ankh was an Egyptian hieroglyphic character that read eternal life, a triliteral sign, and the Egyptian gods are often portrayed carrying it by its loop or bearing one in each hand, arms crossed over their chest. It is also known as the key of life, the key of the Nile, or as crux ansata, Latin for cross with a handle. So I guess the key thing there is that the Ankh is an Egyptian hieroglyphic character that means eternal life. And in the chat, the missing toe earlier when we were discussing this pointed out that it's interesting that Richard Alpert may have a connection there with the Ankh, because Richard Alpert seems to have eternal life. At least he's somebody that we never see aging at all. And we see him all over the place through time, and always seems to be exactly the same age. So it's kind of interesting that there may be some sort of a connection there between the Ankh and Richard Alpert's character. There's some discussion going on in the chat right now. Mormagil brought up, what year does Ben come to the island as a child? And I'm not sure I don't know. Did they say the exact year? Maybe if we look at the timeline on Waspedia, they might give that the exact year. Let me look that up and see if I can find it. We know that it was an unknown date in the 1960s when Ben's mom died giving birth to Ben. And apparently it was an unknown date, but possibly 1976 or 1977 when Ben and his father, Roger Linus, arrived on the island. That was either 1976 or 1977, according to Lostpedia. Ken Walt says, my point is, kid Ben must already be on the island because it is before Horus becomes the Dharma leader. Well, I'm not so sure about that, because Horus Goodspeed was the one who greeted Ben and Roger when they got there in 76 or 77. So Horus would have already been some kind of a leader guy, right, by that point? Well, I don't know. Horus and Olivia Goodspeed came upon the Linuses on the side of the road with the intention to help them. That was when Ben was born in the 60s. So I don't know. I'm not really sure when the whole Dharma Initiative thing began. Alvar Hanso addressed the UN Security Council in 1967. The incident occurs sometime in the 1970s. And apparently 1970, according to the orientation film, that's 1970 is when the Dharma Initiative was created. So I guess when Horus originally met them, he wasn't officially part of the Dharma Initiative yet, because the Dharma Initiative apparently didn't exist yet when Ben was born. When I agree with Ken Walt and James 721 in the chat. They're basically saying that Horus did not seem to be the big boss. He didn't seem to be the main leader. Okay, so we talked about the Ankh. Sawyer, after that scene, Sawyer talks Juliet into staying, and instead of taking the next sub like Juliet was planning to do, he reminds her, you know, you're not in the same timeline, you're not going to be able to go back to your sister. You know, all the things that you think are out there don't exist yet. And he basically talks her into staying on the island and says he needs someone to keep him company. And they seem to be developing some kind of romantic relationship at that point. Let's see. John Carter, by the way, getting back to the timeline, John Carter asks, did Widmore leave the island before Ben arrived? And the missing toe responded, no, Widmore said Ben tricked him into turning the wheel. Okay, so after Sawyer and Juliet talk, the next time we see them is 3 years later, and Sawyer and Juliet are living together. They say, I love you, to each other, and we know that's something that Sawyer doesn't very often say, or we haven't seen him say very often. And Horus explains why he was too busy drinking and blowing up trees to see his own son being born, and he explains that he saw... he found the Ankh in Amy's sock drawer, and so he asked Sawyer if 3 years was long enough to get over somebody. And so Sawyer starts telling Horus a story about how he used to love somebody, and it certainly seems like he's talking about Kate, although I could see how people might think maybe he could be talking about Cassidy. He says... he doesn't even remember what she looks like anymore, and he says 3 years is absolutely long enough to get over someone. Not surprisingly, almost the next scene, I guess the next day, Sawyer is awakened by a phone call, and it's Jin. And Sawyer goes to meet Jin with Hurley, Jack, and Kate are in Jin's Dharma bus. And Kate, of course, is the last one to come out of the bus. And that's pretty much where the episode leaves off. So there's going to be a bit of a reunion between Sawyer and Kate. So assuming that Sawyer is, you know, referring to Kate, you know, regardless of whether he is referring to Kate or not, he's obviously over Kate if he is in love with Juliet at this point. And, you know, another interesting thing, I mean, we certainly had this love quadrangle going on with the same four characters earlier, you know, 3 years earlier, with Sawyer and Jack both being interested in Kate, Juliet kind of being a fourth wheel there, and sometimes she and Jack are kind of flirtatious with each other, and Sawyer and Kate have been together. And so there's this whole messy love quadrangle, whatever. And so it'll be interesting to see what all happens with that. Of course, Jack is the most recent person to have been with Kate, and Sawyer and Juliet are currently together in the current timeline. I'm not much into relationships on the show, but anyway, that was where they left off the episode. All right, I think that's pretty much it for this episode. As far as screenshots and Easter eggs, I think I pretty much talked about what I wanted to on those already. We mentioned the girl's Geronimo Jackson shirt, and we also talked about the Ankh a little bit and the possible connection there with Anubis, who may be the person or the Egyptian god that the statue is depicting. Okay. Well, before I get into the preview for next week, I'm going to talk about that a little bit. And one brief note from the official Lost podcast that I'll talk about in just a moment. But before I do, if anyone is tuning out, I just wanted to make a quick request. If you enjoy this podcast, if you think it's worthy of a 5-star rating, I'd be grateful if anyone would like to go and rate it on iTunes. If you open up iTunes and go to the iTunes store, of course the podcast is free, but for some reason they put all podcasts in the iTunes store section. And if you start to search for the Josh, the space Josh, you'll see the Josh Meisters, and just click on that, and it'll take you to the Josh Meisters Lost podcast. And once you go to the podcast, you can just scroll down in the top section there, and there's a little link that says write a review. So if you enjoy the podcast, feel free to go and write a review. I'd really appreciate it. All right, enough of that. So the preview for next week, I'll talk about that first because that's probably the least spoilery. It's actually not next week. I should point out that we actually do have a week off from Lost. It's going to be coming back in 2 weeks, and so that's what this is a preview for, episode 9. So these are the things that I noticed in the preview, and if anyone else notices anything else, you know, be sure to point them out. I noticed that Sawyer and the other Dharma infiltrators, you know, Juliet and the rest, try to figure out what to do about Jack, Hurley, and Kate so that they won't be seen as hostiles. They've got to come up with some story on who they are and, you know, explain that they're good people. And we see Saeed show up, and he was in a different part of the island. He didn't end up, I wouldn't really say land, but he didn't end up where Jack and Hurley and Kate did after the plane began to crash when they were whisked away. So for some reason, Saeed ended up in someplace else. And so when he goes, you know, to, I guess, try to find the rest of his fellow survivors, he winds up in the Dharma camp, the Dharma town, and I think it looks like Jin found him there, but for some reason he gets captured, and then another says to James Sawyer referring to Saeed, who they think is a hostile. We can end this right now. We shoot him. And so that's a little bit of the conflict that we know is coming up soon on Lost in a couple of weeks, it looks like. Oh, Bailey Bear asks, who said to shoot him? I wasn't sure. I keep wanting to say other because this is like New Otherton or the future New Otherton, but it was actually another Dharma member said to James. But I don't know who the Dharma person was. Okay. I listened to, of course, the official Lost podcast in the most recent episode. There was one particular thing that was kind of an interesting spoiler. In episode 11, they gave the title of the episode. They said it's going to be called What Happens, Happens. And they said in that episode, so this, you know, next time, 2 weeks from now, will be episode 9. So this is 2 episodes after that. They said it will be revealed what happened to Aaron. So there, of course, we knew that that was coming up anyway, so that's not a big shock. But now at least we know how soon we can expect to get the answer on that. Also, the next episode title, not really a huge spoiler because, of course, we know that we're talking about the Dharma Initiative and that's kind of where we are in the plot. But the next episode is called Namaste. And that, of course, is scheduled to air on March 18th. So that's when we'll pick up this podcast again after that episode airs on March 18th. Ken Waltz, has a really good point. James will have a tough time explaining why Saeed is in handcuffs. That's a really great point. I like that. Well, that'll do it for tonight. Thanks to everybody for participating. It's been a lot of fun as always. And until next time, 2 weeks from now, stay lost and namaste.
If you have a product or service that you'd like to market to thousands of Lost fans, find out how you can become a sponsor of this podcast. Send an email to thelostmeister@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Please check out the Josh Meister's Lost blog for links related to this podcast. The address again is thelostmeister, that's thelostmeister.blogspot.com. Thank you, and namaste.